whole lot of buzzing. And if you are not connected to that, that's okay. It's not a bad thing. But for if you are sensitive, there are some shifts going on right now. And it just, for me, it's helping to amplify and improve my sense of energy, you know, my connections. And I know I don't always talk about this, but because I'm talking with Russell Breuniger, who has had this incredible NDE experience and then writes about some of the ET stuff, I know that, you know, if you're listening to this, you might have a sense of what I'm talking about, and it might be a little bit of an affirmation that you're not the only one. Okay. So Russell, I already interviewed him one point for the Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO. I wanted to talk again because we didn't get into some of the stuff he experienced and writes about in the book Overlords of the Singularity. And that's where it gets really fascinating. So Russell, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your work and coming back to talk again about your stuff.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yay. If you're just now hearing Russell for the first time, check out Wendy's Coffee House Blogspot. I've got a blog on there talking about the book and a little bit of a background on this. So that we're going to just do a quick overview here right now to bring you up to speed. And we'll just start with the NDE. Is that probably a good place to go?
Sure, that's fine. I'm 61 years old right now. And until I was 54, I was always a hard science sort of guy, you know, material reductionist. When you die, you're dead. I believe that consciousness was an epiphenomena of the brain. If you organize molecules in a more organized fashion, that consciousness is an emergent phenomena. And on August 18th of 2009, to make a long story short, I was mowing my grass and I had a heart attack in the middle of my yard. And while I was looking for a place to lay down and pass, I had sort of an anomalous experience. It was almost like I got pulled out of time. It was very quiet. There was no birds. There was no cars. And something that really surprised me happened. A number of entities appeared very close to me. The two strangest aspects of this was it was almost like Googling the universe. Russ is dying, and then you know how on Google associated links kind of pop up one at a time, and your most relevant connection pops up first, and then others come after that. Well, I had a collection of beings that I was standing there in the yard with. I didn't physically see them. I just felt their presence. Near as I can describe it, they were like intelligent lightning with an electronic background of some sort. And the surprising thing was some of the people were still living here, living their earthly lives here, which really surprised me. And what it told me was that, you know, people refer to their higher self. This higher self is real, and it exists in another realm. And you've only got a portion of your consciousness invested in this little physical life that you're living, because I knew these people very closely, and I knew they were still living here, but yet there they were in this transcended form. And the most spectacular part of it was a transcended version of myself was one of the beings that was standing there. And it was just a little collection of intelligences, some of whom still live their earthly life, and some of them, you know, I'm sure were discarnate. So it kind of shocked me, and it made me decide to go ahead and live. I was sort of presented with a choice through, as near as I could tell, it was just like a telepathic sensation almost. I didn't hear verbal words or anything. It's just that I got an overwhelming feeling that there was things about my life that I might want to stick around and repair or fix. Mm-hmm. Regarding certain relationships, and that this life is very fragile and valuable, and you might not want to let it go so quickly if you have the option not to. So I quickly decided to go ahead and live a little bit longer in the physical world with this new paradigm that was just thrust upon me, whether I liked it or not. So I ran in and got my keys and drove myself to the hospital. There was no doubt in my mind that I wasn't going to pass on the way to the hospital because I'd been given this choice. And I felt really great knowing that there's another aspect of myself, an aspect of everybody I know that's already living in a timeless state in a non-corporeal existence. So I went to the hospital and they transferred me up to Ball, and I got a couple of stents put in. I stayed overnight in the hospital and I was fine. And when I went home, I was really impacted by that experience. I spent days or even weeks thinking about it all the time, every day. And it prompted me to start doing research into a field that I had always ignored for my entire life, which was the paranormal and, you know, the subject of ghosts and UFOs. And I just had thought all that was nonsense. But since I was so shaken up by this experience and I realized that we are living in an interdimensional reality, this reality connects with other frequency bands, if you want to put it that way, that when our body dies, you know, we're over into another frequency band with entities that we've probably known for eons. So I just started buying books like crazy. I went from a guy who maybe read one book a year to one book a week for several years after that. And the one thing I discovered was that there's a lot of information in the public domain about ghosts, the djinn, poltergeists, the UFO phenomena. I discovered authors like Dr. Jacques Vallée, who wrote Anatomy of a Phenomena and UFOs, A Challenge to Science. And John Keel turned up as one of my favorites. He coined the term ultra-terrestrials, and I really connected with that because Keel thought at least most of the euphonauts or the intelligences behind the UFOs were not flesh and blood organisms from another planet, but from another one of these frequency bands that he called the super spectrum. So I read everything that he wrote. One of his best ones was The Eighth Tower. It was really popular over in England, but he got sort of rocks thrown at him in the United States because everybody was obsessed with the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And Harold Wilkins and Ivan T. Sanderson and all of the authors that you meet, and you realize that there's a lot of correlating data points. For example, in 1954, there was over 1,000 flying saucer landing and UFO euphonaut encounters. And there was a mathematician named Dr. Amy Michel that actually plotted them on a map in France and found out there was a pattern to it where somebody would report a larger cigar-shaped craft in the middle of a star pattern with the little disc sightings going out and these little arms, you know, going forward and backward in straight lines. So that actually wound up into the science of orthotenny. There's actually a name for that phenomena. And that indicated that we're actually dealing with something real and not something fictional or, you know, imaginary or hallucinatory. Everything we know about hallucinations is not the way the UFO phenomena works. And I discovered other people like Dorothy Isaacs and Stella Lansing and Woodrow Derenberger, who seemed to have Antonio Urzi, that seemed to have some sort of psychic connection with objects that we're calling flying saucers, and they were actually able to capture some of them on film and lots of little film anomalies and stuff. So Dorothy Isaacs has one film from a Super 8 movie projector, I guess, that has one frame. It just explodes into this bunch of squiggles, which was a demonstration that it was a real phenomenon, that it couldn't really be reproduced by some sort of film tampering or hoax. So I gravitated, like everybody, I started out with the extraterrestrial hypothesis and gravitated into more of an interdimensional or extra-dimensional perspective on the situation, because the skeptics are actually right. And I was, of course, once a UFO skeptic. Oh, you can't get here from there. You know, even if you traveled at close to the speed of light, it would take you millions of years to get here. It's just not going to happen. And then when the interdimensional paradigm was thrust upon my consciousness, I realized that consciousness is the key to this whole thing, that they're not coming here, a lot of them, in physical spacecraft, that we're talking about civilizations that have developed the technology to dissolve the veil between the incarnate and the discarnate world and travel in a consciousness field. And Dr. Stephen Greer talks a lot about this. A lot of the lectures that he has on YouTube I connected with. He tells how the UFOs are actually constructed in sort of an astral level, and they're not put together with rivets or nuts and bolts or anything. So we're talking about non-physical beings coming here in a non-physical craft through a consciousness field, and then they can likely go anywhere in the universe that they want and materialize, at least temporarily. We're not really sure if they can materialize permanently. They don't seem to do that, but they do materialize temporarily and then disappear just like you turn off a light bulb. So there's thousands and thousands of people that have witnessed such things. And you get into Roger Penrose and Stuart Hameroff's orchestrated theory of consciousness. And it's there's a lot of people who are coming to the same conclusion. The NDE that I had correlates very well with a lot of other people's NDEs, and I'm well aware of the what science says about a near-death experience. Dr. Eben Alexander, that wrote Proof of Heaven, goes into a lot of the chemical changes in the brain as you approach a near-death experience. But just like ingesting psychedelic mushrooms or LSD or some type of psychotropic substance like DMT, the chemical changes in the brain are what allows you to actually see some of these other frequency bands and experience them, maybe not in a physical way, but in a consciousness sort of way. Graham Hancock is another person that I really like. He wrote a book called Supernatural, and the big debate is whether these entities that people meet when they drink ayahuasca or take psychotropic drugs have a freestanding reality of their own, or if they're a byproduct of the chemical changes in the brain. So a lot of cutting-edge researchers are into this consciousness field and coming to the conclusion that consciousness actually pre-exists matter, that consciousness pre-existed the physical universe, and that there's intelligence behind this whole thing.
Well, and that's the part that I think is finally, it's about time that we're onto that instead of just trying to, you know, get the little gray man and dissect it and then go from there, because that doesn't help with frogs. So I don't, you know, the mentality there is a little bit backwards. This part I've experienced as well. And so when you're talking about something that looks real and looks tangible, I had the up close and personal experience where I had in the bedroom, my dog was growling, and I'm thinking, well, that must be the cat trying to get on the bed because he's got a little jealousy thing. And he growled a little bit, but I thought, that's kind of odd. So I opened my eyes just halfway, and at that point, I realized there was something in the bedroom, and it's right up by the ceiling, and I called it a Christmas tree thing. It was a disc-shaped, and I mean looking at flat, like you were looking at the, a plate as it was sitting on a table. You're looking at that, and it's round, and it has bulbs on it that look like the clear bulb, and there are red and green bulbs on this plate. I did report that one to MUFON. Somebody else, I told them, I said, you have to report it because it's so different. It isn't what you normally think of as a UFO or ET. But with that, when I actually focused, then that's when it decided to shift. And it went from that right inside my bedroom, right beside the window, about, maybe 18 inches inside the window, and 6 or 8 inches down from the ceiling, it went immediately to the outside, and I could see it through the mini blinds. I could see the light. So I knew that whatever it did, it shifted dimensions within a fraction of a second. It was outside the house. And I also knew it wasn't going to help me to go try and take a picture of it. It didn't want to be seen. Whatever it had been doing, it had been caught or at least identified, and that wasn't what it wanted to be at that time. So this, to me, it looked very real. I didn't see if it cast any kind of illumination on the walls. To me, it was just, I was so caught trying to figure out for one thing, I was trying to figure out how many lights. Okay, I know I can't take a photograph. I have to imprint this so I can at least remember it and, you know, say something about it, write it down before I forget it and it goes away. But the fact that the dog saw it let me know it wasn't just me. It wasn't a hallucination. I was awake, and it happened. That always helps to have something there to help you in some way, shape, or form bookmark it and give it a tangible space presence in your waking reality, in my opinion.
You know, author Philip K. Dick talked a lot about that with his little moth-like creature that would come in and land on his forehead. He called it Firefly. And his wife, Tessie, you know, talks a lot about that in some introductions to his book, Valis, Fast Active Living Intelligence System. So mm-hmm. there's thousands and thousands of people that have experienced such things. And the nice thing about social media is there's all kinds of experiencer sites popping up where people are sharing their experiences. And what we're finding out is that it's a lot more common than what was once thought. John Keel speaks of the silent contactees. He says, for every person that talks and has the courage to do so, there's 1,000 that keep their mouths shut because they're afraid of losing their job or losing family or friends or people thinking that they're a little nutty. But as everybody's coming out into the open, it's like a big coming out party. You know, people are talking about things that anomalous things that have happened to them and finding that there's correlations and similar experiences that they've had. So I think it's great. We're living in a really interesting time here where there's a giant wave of paradigm shift that's happening, and we're going into the interdimensional field with consciousness as the big key to travel throughout the universe and throughout other interlocking universes. That's what J. Allen Hynek concluded after 20 or 30 years of, you know, studying this subject and being the scientific consultant to Blue Book. I think Dr. Father Gill's mass sighting in Papua New Guinea in 1957, I believe, was what turned him over with that, because he said that he concluded that we live in interlocking universes. He was very much a hardcore skeptic until about 16 years into working for Blue Book, and finally took all the Blue Book files and started his own. I believe it's called KUFOS. And last I heard, the records were in Chicago, of the remnant of Project Blue Book. He also had a trunk load of remnants that was mostly silicon carbide. A lot of times when they have a creature sighting, you know, a cryptid sighting or a UFO sighting, there's a little puddle of silicon carbide, a physical tangible element left behind. And he had a whole collection of this. There's a fellow named Bob White that collected an object that dripped off of what he called a flying saucer. And it had all kinds of multiple metals attached to one another that couldn't possibly have been made here. So why they drip silicon carbide, nobody knows. But we do have the physical trace evidence of it.
Well, and that part of it, we're going to have to upgrade our science and our capabilities to understand this as well and what it might be used for. It may be that it's a very easily transducible or trans... what happens when it shifts dimensions?
Transmogrification.
Oh, good. Okay, good. It can shift form and formulate in another state. That's
right,
something
right.
I think with water, we're discovering that the water actually has more states than we believed. Where it's in, when it's frozen, it has two different elements. I believe, I can't remember immediately, this has just come out in the last month, saying that at the frozen state that it actually has, where it's a liquid and still frozen, and that makes it much more fascinating than we had any idea. Our science is evolving so fast right now. That's what I think is fabulous.
Oh, yes.
They're finally putting consciousness into the equation, and instead of discounting it, because they tried to do this before and just kept, you know, no, it's one or the other. And this is like, finally, there's something else. And the belief is that once we are able to define scientifically what consciousness is, we're going to collect a huge amount of information about ourselves, our universe, our reality. And
right.
That's the big step.
Tesla was way ahead of his time on that. He developed what he called a little spirit radio. And that's one of the things that I predict will happen as we head into a technological singularity, is we're going to invent a technology that dissolves the veil between the incarnate and the discarnate world, and we'll be able to communicate with people on these other levels.
They're already communicating with us. It's just that it's not a mass accessible way. For mine, I have a non-corporeal a connection with a non-corporeal being that's happened since 1997, blinks the night lights and energy around me. And it's been doing this 24/7. Everywhere I go, the night light is interactive. It blinks at night when I go to sleep. It turns itself off. It's a nightlight that's supposed to be on 24/7. And the nightlight goes off when I go to bed because, as I have asked and it is said, we are not a nightlight.
Interesting. Well, a couple of things we need to throw out, and that's our concept of time and our concept of spatial dimension. A lot of people report little bitty tiny flying saucers coming in through their window that might be 3 inches in diameter. But what they don't know is their consciousness can be extracted from their body and taken into this craft. And from their perspective, when they get inside, it might be hundreds and hundreds of feet long. So dimensionality, as we know it, is manipulatable. And post-singularity civilizations have, a lot of them have likely mastered both time and dimensionality. So nothing is as it seems. And the quantified Planck time that we're experiencing, where it's just one frame at a time, can also likely be manipulated. Like if you look at the Turkey UFO sighting, 3 years in a row, this same ship showed up, and this has been authenticated by TÜBİTAK, the Turkey laboratory, and other laboratories in the world. That's a real event. It's not a hoax. And they identified four beings inside this craft. Two look like your traditional grays, like you'd expect them to look. There's another being that's laying in supine in front of the two beings, and then there's a mantid-type creature behind who seems to be in some sort of supervisory position. But all 3 years in a row where they showed up, they were doing the same thing. So that tells me that what might have been 5 or 10 minutes by their clock was 3 years by our clock. Mm-hmm. So they've figured out the time mechanism itself, and they're able to travel in bundles of blank time or manipulate the way time flows in certain ways. So we're at a point where we need to open up our minds into some things that we once thought were impossible or were the domain of charlatans. It used to be if you talked about other dimensions, you know, they'd think you're a crackpot, but now it's cutting-edge science. Michio Kaku, theoretical physicist, talks about it a lot in his book, Parallel Worlds and Hyperspace and the Future of the Mind. And I've read just about everything that he wrote, and it's fascinating material. He's one of the few authors that likes to speculate a lot, and I really like somebody that's as learned as he is, who lets us know, you know, what their speculations are and what they predict will happen in the future. And I'm really fascinated by his work.
Overlords of the Singularity, that's the name of your book, The Manipulation of Mankind by Hidden UFO Intelligences and the Quest for Transcendence. That's nonfiction. And this is where you get into some of this stuff.
Right. What I noticed in all the literature about the so-called flying saucer crashes, my take on that is that these are intentional staged events to feed us technology that's just a little bit ahead of where we're at so we can understand it. And these are being orchestrated by the people that have an interest in us achieving a technological singularity. And there's a whole group of different factions that are interested in a technological singularity happening on Earth, where everything just suddenly changes. Our technology used to be it might double every year to 2 years, and now we're moving into an exponential increase in technology, and humankind, as we know it, has never experienced something like that. So there's going to be a lot of technological breakthroughs that seem miraculous. People in wheelchairs will be able to walk. The blind will see. A lot of it will seem very miraculous to people. But if you get into William Bromley's stuff, who wrote The Gods of Eden, he started out trying to determine the underlying causes of warfare and conflict on this planet. And what he thought he would find was real mundane causes like poverty or territorial acquisition. And what he discovered instead was two non-human groups, one of whom wants to use warfare and conflict to expedite our growth into this technological singularity, because when there's conflict, you're always trying to find weaponry to beat your neighbors and to, you know, get the upper hand and all that. So the conflict, I believe, was generated for the purpose of expediting technology. And then there's another faction that he calls the Maverick Group, and he includes Jesus in that category of beings who have an interest in human spirituality And so one group is rather malevolent towards us and is wanting us to achieve this technological singularity for their own purposes, possibly to Borg part of the human life wave under themselves into some sort of transhumanist situation. And then the other group has our spiritual welfare in mind and may have something to do with this upcoming solar flash event that David Wilcott likes to talk about.
Okay, hey, wait. Stop. We're going to stop right there. Got to take a quick break. Come back because that's a good place to start. The solar flash. Okay, right. So Russell Brenniger coming up with more of this fantastic future.
Wildfires burn millions of acres each year. And each year, wildland firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home, your community, or more. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. But you can do something firefighters can't. You can act now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. You can reduce the risk. Do your part. Go to fireadapted.org.
Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
I'm John, a volunteer at United Way. I'm here at Lincoln Elementary School to find out what this place needs. Who knows better about what kids need than kids, right? Let's ask them.
Monsters!
Lasers!
A pool!
Another guinea pig!
More lasers!
Sprinkles!
I was thinking more spinach at lunchtime and maybe more exercise.
Lasers are cool.
When it comes to creating healthier communities, what this place needs is you. To donate or volunteer, go to unitedway.org. Because great things happen when we live united. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Find a relaxed position to let go of the time you left your daughter's blouse in the dryer too long and it shrunk four sizes, or when you donated her private diary to the public library. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Pacific Power Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. And my guest, Russell Brenniger, who had an incredible near-death experience, which then kind of flip-flopped reality into a whole better view and much more roomy. which is the way mine is. I loved it when I had, and now there's a word for it, spiritually transcendent experience. Okay, an STE. And that was in 1997. Now, it doesn't mean I had other just instances of being out of my body, of having spiritual connections, having knowing my guides, having them help me when I was in danger, and saying out loud, run. So I knew this other stuff was out there. I did not know that this nightlight thing was going to start and it was going to keep saying to me, that we have to expand our awareness and our horizons. And when you were talking about seeing your higher self, what they gave me, because that's when I started working with guides, was this, and I wrote it in a book. I put a little book out there called Talking to Nightlights. What they said was basically what we are in this experience, in this body, the soul that we are is so tiny in this particular state that we would, if they gave us an analogy, we would be in totality the alphabet. And what shows up in this form is one letter. So I am W, where my whole essence, that other part of me, is the entire alphabet. So trying to give us an idea of what we're going through here is just a fraction of what our bigger reality, our bigger state of presence in being is. And that, so I loved it when you said you met your higher self. I had not heard anybody who had that kind of experience where they met that transcendent element of themselves. And so that's why I love the way that that you then followed through. I did the same thing, reading everything I could get my hands on. Michio Kaku was one, David Deutsch, Lee Smolin, Brian Greene, all this science stuff that I really wasn't into. I liked stars, but you know, the math wasn't anything that I got into. For one thing, it wasn't my forte, nor was it my background's broadcasting. So with this happening, then I'm getting all these prompts and all this information and not having anywhere to go with it. 1997, this was still, you know, was way off into the cuckoo clan. And so when I was able to start talking about it more like 2007, then there were more people and more avenues. And when you're talking about David Wilcock talking about this big flash event, which we interrupted you very rudely, so we had to take a break, that's what I wanted to get into. Lots of people are getting this information saying something big is coming.
Yes. Clouds are developing at the equatorial region of Mars. Our moon, which is likely somewhat hollow and artificial, is developing a natrium atmosphere. Rings on the outer planets are developing, and we're going into, there's science behind this, that we're moving into some sort of energetic region of space. And the one thing that I love about David Wilcock is he cites all kinds of people that you can look up on your own. And one of them is Dr. Alexei Dmitriev, and there's a website called the Millennium Group on the internet, and he talks about vacuum domains and the energetic cloud that we're moving into and what the possible ramifications of this are. And then if you combine that with the work of Dr. William Tift and Dr. Harold Aspen, who's passed away now, but his wife posted all of his work on the internet, I believe it's haroldaspen.com, Wilcock is really good. He's got a memory just like a computer, and I'm really impressed with his ability to connect dots together. I don't know anybody on this planet that has connected more dots together than he has, and I really enjoy his wisdom teachings on Gaia TV, along with Cosmic Disclosure with Corey Good. And I know a lot of these figures that are coming out of the woodwork and saying various things, they enter into a sea of controversy right away. And my suggestion would be just to listen and keep an open mind, because there's a lot of the aspects of this reality that we just don't comprehend right now. And things may not be as neatly packaged in a box as we once thought. So I try not to rush to judgment and weigh what somebody's saying, you know, against my current concept of reality, because it changed so radically in 2009 that I'm wondering what else is out there to change into. What is it I don't understand about reality? What can I learn from this person just by listening? Now, are there hucksters out there? Probably. You know, there always is a small percentage of people that want to ascend into the limelight and make a name for themselves or whatever. But even those folks are interesting, because once you realize that this whole phenomena, the UFO phenomena, is real, that there's solid basis for believing in such things, you're not so worried about if somebody comes along with a hoax or a fraud or anything. I mean, that's just one in thousands. And mm-hmm. It only takes one incident to be real to change reality forever. Same thing goes for cryptid sightings and all that. It only takes one. You know, and reality is not what we thought it was.
Well,
so,
part of it is, I mean, when they do these studies, some people are unable to see the same thing. 5 or 10 people are all witnessing, and there may be 2 or 3 who can't see it. They are not in that same wavelength. And so to say, well, it didn't happen because I didn't see it, is again, not taking the whole into equation into play, because that's what's happening. And that, I think, has been the big challenge to get past that hurdle when people, especially when they're working with mediums or psychics who do have legit information, but other people can't see it. So they want to discredit it and say, well, no, we didn't experience it. Well, that's the thing. Not everybody will have the identical experience. And that makes this a whole lot more, I think, of an exploration of, well, what are we seeing? And then we really have to work together to connect the dots instead of just saying, well, one person has all the answers. It doesn't work that way.
Right. And humans have a tendency to want to put everything into a box. And even within ufology, there's the extraterrestrial hypothesis and the interdimensional hypothesis. They're not necessarily at odds. There could possibly be both. If you examine Morris K. Jessup's The Case for the UFO and The Expanding Case for the UFO, you'll come away convinced that there are mechanical craft in our solar system that are hiding out somewhere we haven't discovered yet, because they've been observed transiting the sun, transiting Venus. At one point in the 1800s, astronomers observed two spheres next to Venus. One was called Neith, and the other one they named Monstrator. And then after a couple of decades of observations, they just disappeared. So there are things, physical things, that come into the solar system here that likely contain flesh and blood creatures. But then there's also the larger reality of the interdimensional phenomena. And anybody coming here from millions of light years away has definitely mastered the interdimensional aspect of this reality. And they're able to go pretty much anywhere they want and then materialize into their reality, or even take on a human body and walk amongst us. I mean, what they're capable of doing in what Michio Kaku calls a Type 3 civilization is just beyond our comprehension. It would seem like magic.
And Ruth Montgomery was talking about this years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's among us. And then there are other people who are currently writing and saying they are here. You just won't recognize them because they look a whole lot like us.
Well, interestingly, astronomer Neil deGrasse Tyson said something. I don't know if he realized how profound it was he said it. He said aliens could be here and we might be too dense to realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he comes across as sort of a UFO skeptic, which a lot of modern scientists do. They want the hard, tangible evidence. They haven't, caught on to the interdimensional or consciousness component of this whole thing yet, and that's fine. It's everybody grows at their own pace. But he said a couple of things that just nail the situation for the way I've concluded it actually is, but yet somehow it eludes him. And
I like his perceptions as well. And I do listen to what he says, even though he's not real big on the after death. When you die, you're done, you're dead, you're gone. I wanted to see what his perspective was on that. But the other things that he does in terms of his science and his credibility and his emphasis on what it takes to be a decent human being, he has those pretty much in a very good perspective.
Yes, he does. Leslie Keen just wrote a nice book, Surviving
Death.
That is just a tour de force ascertaining that there is. He goes into childhood, living former lives, that actually when their parents check it out, you know, it all checks out. And physical mediums that have materializations, you know, going on.
Yes.
And it's a really good book. If you have any doubt that there's life after death, read her book. It's a good one.
Jim Tucker, I think, is one of the ones she cites in that book, and he followed up on the work of Ian Stevenson, who does the after-death, near-death research for past lives and children who do have the same, whatever it is, if it's like the grandfather was one of them, I remember, had a heart issue, and then the grandson has a heart issue, same kind of issues, and then he has a similar mannerisms, similar birthmarks, those kinds of things. They've been doing research like this in India for years, if not hundreds of years. But us, our Western civilization has been poo-pooing it because it doesn't, it somehow meet our materialistic viewpoint. These things, I think, are shifting. And that's what experiencers and near-death experiencers are bringing to the equation. It reminds me of the blind man and the elephant. And this is what the guides gave me a vision, and the vision was of a colander. And all I could see was this thing that I could only identify. I couldn't see the whole thing. It had holes in it. It was metal. And I'm thinking, well, how do you know what's on the other side? And the perspective was you couldn't look directly at it. You had to get a mirror, look at the mirror, and that would show you. And it may not be just one mirror, but you would have to have a way of looking at it beyond the current situation. And that's where we are right now. Like the blind man and the elephant, if you don't know that story, the parable of the guys, each one has a different part of the elephant body. And
right,
one
right.
has the side, the tusk, the tail, and they each say, well, this is what it is. And they're absolutely right, but they're missing the bigger picture. And that's where we are.
There's really, I'm not an insider or a whistleblower or anything like that, but there, I guess you could call the NDE, classify me as some sort of an experiencer, but there's only two things that I feel like major things I bring to the table to remove one more layer off the onion of mystery, and that is the near-death experience itself, ascertained 100% that there is life after death, there's a lot going on beyond the veil, and that you have another aspect of yourself that already lives there. So not only did it remove my fear of death, I actually look forward to going back into the discarnate world because I miss my friends that showed up in the yard when I had my heart attack. they were very familiar to me, and it was really, really tempting to go ahead and cave in to be with them again. But I know they're there, and when this body quits working, it won't be too long. I'm 61 now. I mean, how long can somebody live? So I'm really actually looking forward to the homecoming reunion, so to speak, when my body ceases to function and I'm back into the discarnate world. And I actually got the sense that I'm more comfortable in the discarnate world than I am here. I've had some lifelong issues, adjusting to this material existence, and I'll be glad to let it go and get back into the realm that I'm more comfortable with.
I think there are a lot of us in that position. Part of it is we go back and forth in between. And I really am so thrilled that I've had an ability to see that state and to know that, okay, this is temporary. And at the same time, that doesn't make it any less valuable. There are moments when I'm here and just think, my God, this is so extraordinary. I'm looking at these just like a piece of the day when I make eye contact with a squirrel, or, my cat or my dog does something really cool, or the flowers are blooming, or the sun is so spectacular. And it just, when you've had these experiences, the stuff here becomes more intense and in many ways textured. And it's like, wow, why don't people just get it?
Right. Well, if there's any doubt that there's love in the universe, get yourself a puppy. We had a Yorkie that passed away on January the 26th unexpectedly, and I deeply regret every day that I didn't take Melanie or dog for a walk or pay more attention to her. And I work in a nursing home as an occupational therapist, and there was a patient that came in that said she had a Yorkie poo that she couldn't take care of anymore. So I went over to her sons to look at it and just fell in love when they handed it to me. So we've got a Yorkie poo puppy that just turned 1 year old. And it's just a delight. It's just a total delight. I make sure I go on a walk every day, possibly two, and the walks just go by like a breeze. I almost feel like she's keeping me healthy after a heart attack by walking me twice a day.
Absolutely.
She's walking me.
Absolutely.
But it does seem to be a universe where carnage and horror is juxtaposed along with astounding majesty and beauty. And somehow I sort of sense that we're proxies in a larger struggle with good and evil, or however you want to term it, and that we're here to make a choice. And this upcoming solar flash event, I've listened to the scientists that are talking about this thing, that it may be some sort of interdimensional shift, and there does seem to be a rush towards a technological singularity for the purposes of possibly merging at least a portion of the human life wave with another, what we would call an alien population, possibly the Draco reptilians or the Orion Greys or both, and they have their own purposes for the human life wave. But there's another group that I want to connect with anyway, and these are the humanoids that showed up as the Friendship Group in Italy in the 50s, the W56 group. There's apparently very benevolent entities that have interacted positively with the human race and infused hope that there is a path that we can take to where, if and when the solar event happens, that a portion of humanity anyway will be transcended into another or a higher dimension, the ones that disavowed, you know, all of the evil and dominion and seeking power over others and all that.
What in terms of my own stuff that I get from this non-corporeal connection is that each of us resonates a certain frequency. Mm-hmm. And if you are in sync, then that is where the fold will be.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be, you know, a mental, oh, I pledge this. It's an immediate, instantaneous shift. And the
right.
result of that is not meant to be something that we can speak or describe. It's meant to be something that we will integrate. And again, this is who you are, what you are. When I've spoken with the entities who are visiting, some of them, I don't talk to all of them, but the first thing they said to me was, we don't want to frighten you. Because I said, why can't I see you? We don't want to frighten you. Well, that gives me an idea that I might not be ready for a corporeal presence. And the other thing was that you need to elevate your own light to be able to, you know, ascension is why they keep focusing on this, for us to expand our awareness. And the one thing that they have given me that we have, there's only one rule, do no harm.
Right.
That's it. Do no harm. It doesn't not be love. It's do no harm.
And yeah, we're here to learn how to love and to acquire knowledge. Those two are the most important things to use this physical life for, to acquire knowledge and to develop your skills of loving other people and developing your service to others. And that's one of the reasons I decided to stay in 09 is because I had some relationships that were in disrepair, and I've worked very, very hard to heal those relationships and make everything okay. And what he said was right on the money, because if you notice, even in this life, any major change that you make, all of a sudden there's people around you that are in the same frame of mind. I once had long hair, and it seemed like everybody I hung out with, you know, had a ponytail or something. And then I shaved my head, and it was really strange. I was sitting around a table, and everybody around the table had a shaved head. And it's like whatever you buy a Volkswagen, you see Volkswagens. I mean, there's a law of attraction going on here in this physical realm that extends into the non-physical realm. So when your body quits working, you will naturally ascend or gravitate to exactly where you belong and where you deserve. And you'll be around other entities that are in a similar boat.
And part of it, you know, go ahead.
Well, the encouragement that I received was the transcendent version of myself that I met in 09 was so fantastical. It was almost like science fiction that I'm really wanting to learn more about this aspect of myself. You know, am I connected with other people in an oversoul group? Am I all by myself? I mean, there's questions that have come up in my mind since 09 when this happened that the next time I have an opportunity to exit, I'm really going to wholeheartedly embrace it because my curiosity is killing me.
Have you read the Seth material?
I am familiar with the Seth material. My father, who was a very traditional 50s style father, strangely was into Seth Speaks and The Nature of Personal Reality. I have not read those yet, but they're on my reading list.
That's where the oversoul stuff comes in, the oversoul groups. And I wasn't into it either. But as soon as this experience happened, then all of a sudden I had these books being given to me. And that was one of the ones, Oversoul 7, I think, is the one that follows.
I'm going to have to absorb those. I have delved into Dr. Michael Newton's work where he hypnotized people in between lifetimes and found that cross-culturally people say, you know, very similar things. And sometimes they're interacting with non-humans. And mm-hmm. One of the reasons I think that non-humans interact with us is there's, 200 trillion galaxies? There's other intelligences out there that we may have lived on other planets in what we would call the past or what we would call the future. And this transcended version of yourself includes all of those experiences all at once. And the reason that children come into this world and have imaginary friends or they talk to people that other people can't see is they've just come from the discarnate realm where they still have connections with either human or non-human entities. Sergeant Clifford Stone tells of his experience of having imaginary friends or friends that looked like other human children when he was a child that other people couldn't see. And then by and large, one of them revealed his true appearance, and he was just like a little gray alien with green skin, and he told him where he was from and from this planet and another dimension and all that. And he calls this being Corona. And when his son passed away from a motorcycle accident, Corona actually took him into this discarnate realm so that he could have one last interaction with his son. And I totally believe him. I totally believe that happened because either through technological or psychic means, they have the ability, some of these intelligences have the ability to extract your consciousness from your body, and you may have an experience that seems like days or weeks and then put you right back at the moment when they took you. So in this realm, no time has elapsed whatsoever, but you've had this experience in an alternate reality where it seemed like a lot of time has passed.
I have been in the car driving and watched my second body beside me and realized, oh, I need to focus because I was out of in that second body state. And I've had time shifts where I've been given a telepathic alert, basically, do not telegraph is what the warning was. Do not telegraph your experience because you'll be stuck in this reality and we're just giving you a glimpse. And so I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to interview some people coming up who had that same, they were in a different reality and they didn't know it, but they said it was so surreal because it usually when they went to this restaurant, there was no cover charge. The night they showed up, there was a cover charge. They're like, no, we're not doing that. But there were so many things that actually bookmarked and tagged and gave them a clue that the reality had shifted, but they weren't used to dealing with that. And when I'm hearing it, I'm going, I know how this works. Yes, this is exactly how it works. This happens. But it's really fascinating when they give you a clue and say, this is going to happen. Now, don't telegraph because then you're going to have to deal with consequences and you don't want to create it. And I'm like, my gosh, I'm living a science fiction story. And that's what happens. It's just mind-boggling that it can so fluid and fit right in your reality, and yet nobody else will believe it until they've had their own experience. And that's what's happening now is people are getting the wonderful opportunity to have these experiences and say, wow, maybe we are going through something that everybody is having a shift and each one has it in his own way. And it's not fiction. It is a transition into a different way of integrating and believing and experiencing reality.
There's an interesting author named Richard Kinnegar. He went by a pen name called Eklok Wishana. And some time ago, he wrote a book called The Ultimate Frontier. And he's basically a contactee since the age of 10. But he speaks of an event called the progression of the life waves, where people who have developed so much negative karma, who hang out on the lower astral plane, who want to incarnate but can't by cosmic law anymore, are recycled into some other physical existence, maybe start over from a Stone Age existence. And then the people that make it to what he calls mastership get to transcend, you know, into some higher reality. And he wrote this back in the 70s or 80s, I forget, but it's very, very similar to what's being spoke of now with the solar flash, which the Zoroastrians call Fragio Coretti. It may even be what the Christians call the rapture, where there's some sort of ascension or transitional event. So we're living exciting times. The other piece of the puzzle outside of we live in an interdimensional reality is that technology has something to do with our interactions with non-human intelligences in various capacities. I think that we're sort of breeding stock genetically. If you look at Antonio Villas Boas, you know, where he was captured by a group of almost like dog aliens that grunted to each other and taken aboard a craft and had, you know, sexual relations with an alien-looking woman. His story was just abjectly rejected at the time that he said it, even though he had puncture marks under his chin and some physical evidence that what he was saying was true. But there's another one, the Peter Curry incident in 1992, where he had a trace evidence of a hair that was left behind. And UFO researcher Bill Chalker had this hair DNA analyzed and wrote a book called The Hair of the Alien. Which indicates it turned out to be a weird combination of Chinese mongoloid and Laplander. And the strange thing about that is John Keel used to carry with him pictures when he went on MIB encounters, people that reported encounters with the men in black. They'd always say that they looked Asian, and he had these pictures of various ethnicities that he carried with him, and they always pointed to the Laplanders. So
we gotta
that
go.
Just kind of struck me as a weird informational point there, that the hair that was left behind on Peter Curry from an alien sexual encounter was actually analyzed in a DNA lab to be a combination of Chinese Mongoloid and Laplander. I just thought that was kind of neat.
This is why we all have to share our stories and talk. We got to go, Russell. Thank you.
Okay.
We'll have to talk again because you've got some wonderful thoughts connecting.
There's a lot more to cover.
I know. That's why we're going to talk again.
Okay.
Till next time.
Till next time.
Yes. And check out the book, Russell Breuniger, or check out Wendy's Coffee House. I've got links there.